With the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza now close to entering its sixth month, the death toll surpasses 30,200, majority of them women and children. Israel conducts a drone attack on a car on a road used by the UN interim force in Lebanon, killing three people. And following Iranian elections for parliament and the assembly of experts, attention now focuses on the outcome as vote counting is underway. Now more Palestinians have lost their lives as Israel continues ahead with its genocidal campaign in the Gaza Strip, now in its 148th day. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, at least 92 Palestinians were killed and 156 others injured over the past 24 hours. At least 17 people were killed in attacks on Deir el-Balah and the Jabalia refugee camp just today. The ministry says many people are still trapped under rubble as rescuers are unable to reach them. A day ago, at least 10 children were reportedly died from malnutrition and dehydration in the same city. Death toll from Israel's relentless onslaught on Gaza since early October has surpassed 30,300, most of them women and children, and more than 71,500 Palestinians have also been injured, while thousands more remain unaccounted for. Israel continues to use starvation as an instrument of war against Palestinians in Gaza, while also intensifying airstrikes on the besieged enclave. Our correspondent joined us earlier from Deir el-Balah with more.
In the meantime, it's worth mentioning that the Israeli occupation forces are still using starvation as a weapon of war against the Palestinian people, taking more lives of the Palestinian children in Gaza Strip. The number of the Palestinian children who have been killed since the over the last couple of days actually amounted to 13 Palestinian children. 13 Palestinian children were killed in a cold blood by the Israeli occupation forces as they were deprived of having the food and clean drinkable water, causing them a malnutrition and a dehydration. And this number is highly expected to rise exponentially as thousands of the Palestinian children are living the same circumstances of deprivation of the needed humanitarian needs and assistance and the needed medical care. We are talking about catastrophic and beyond catastrophic humanitarian conditions. The need for the people here is very dire. And having this sporadic humanitarian aid allowed into Gaza or dropped in, on Gaza Strip actually means nothing compared to the dire need that the Palestinian people are living and experiencing, particularly when it comes to the children. What Gaza Strip really needs these moments is the flow, the continuous flow of the humanitarian aid into Gaza Strip. And this actually needs a real political willingness from the regional parties. They need to oblige the Israeli occupation to allow the entry of those humanitarian aid into Gaza Strip without having any restriction. The Israeli occupation forces committed a telling massacre over the last night here in Deir el-Balah city after destroying and targeting at least 3 residential buildings in the central of Deir el-Balah and in the eastern part of Deir el-Balah, claiming the lives of at least 22 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children. They were attacked and killed as they were sleeping inside their houses.
And intense battles are also underway on the ground in Gaza with Palestinian fighters repelling attacks by Israeli forces. The military wing of Islamic Jihad released videos showing its fighters clashing with Israeli soldiers in and around the Al Zaytun neighborhood of Gaza City. The Al-Quds brigades also launched mortar shells at a gathering of regime soldiers in northern Gaza. Also in the north, Mujahideen brigades hit a Merkava tank with missiles. Resistance groups also said they shot down an Israeli drone over the southeastern part of Gaza. Tel Aviv says a total of 242 Israeli soldiers have been killed since ground fighting began in late October in Gaza. Palestinian resistance groups, however, say Israel is concealing the actual number, which is much higher. The United Nations says that many of the victims of deadly food convoy attack in Gaza City had gunshot wounds, and that's despite Israeli claims that the incident was a stampede. Spokesman for the UN Secretary General says gunshot wounds have been confirmed by a UN team during a visit to Al-Shifa Hospital, where many of the victims were taken. Stéphane Dujarric's comments echo those by director of Al-Auda Hospital in Jabalia. Mohamed Salah earlier said 142 of the 176 victims of Thursday's incident taken to the hospital had gunshot wounds. Eyewitnesses also said that Israeli soldiers opened fire on starving Palestinians who were waiting for aid. Attack left 112 people dead and hundreds wounded. The Palestinians injured when aid trucks entered Gaza on Thursday evening. Say Israeli forces shot them as they rushed to get food for their families. Here are some accounts of the incident by some of the wounded.
When the aid trucks arrived, I went there, and then the tank and the drone began to fire. I got injured in the back, and I was bleeding for an hour until someone from my relatives came and took me to the hospital.
We were in Al-Rashid Road waiting for aid. At 3:30, they started firing shells and shooting at people. We were on the beach. My son ran to the beach and they shot him twice. One grazed his head and the other in his chest.
We are very hungry. We don't have food or anything. They fired shells at us. They attacked us. They squashed us. They shot at us. There is no food. There is nothing. We want flour to eat. They shot the little ones. They humiliated us. They threw gas at us.
And there seems to be no end in sight to Israeli deadly raids on the occupied West Bank. A Palestinian teenager is the latest victim of an attack near the city of Ramallah. According to the Palestinian news agency, Mohammed Aldi was shot in the head during an Israeli attack on the town of Kafr Ni'mah. Regime forces also raided the cities of Kalkilia, Al-Khalil, and Azun. In Kalkilia, a Palestinian was abducted after locals resisted a raid on their city. Israel's intensified its incursions across the West Bank since launching its genocidal war on Gaza. Attacks by Israel's forces and settlers have left more than 400 Palestinians dead in occupied territory since early October. And three people have been killed in an Israeli drone strike targeting a vehicle in the city of Nakuda in southern Lebanon. Attack on the car on a road used by the UN interim force is the latest in a spate of Israel's aerial strikes on southern Lebanon. Meanwhile, the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says it struck an Israeli command center in northern occupied territories using a kamikaze drone. Hezbollah and Israel have been engaged in exchanges of fire since the regime launched its genocidal campaign on Gaza. Lebanese resistance fighters have mainly targeted Israeli military positions, but the Israeli regime's even targeted residential areas in Lebanon, causing deaths of civilians. More Lebanese have lost their lives as Israeli airstrikes once again target residential area in southern Lebanon. Mariam Saleh joined us earlier from Beirut with the details.
Well, you mentioned, Daniel, the car that was struck by three, at least, rockets from a drone, from an Israeli drone. The Israelis say they killed three people in that car. We still don't have official confirmation either from Hezbollah or any official side here in Lebanon to confirm the number of the martyrs and if they were Hezbollah members or civilians. We were told that there were no civilians in that car. But in addition to that strike, the Israelis have launched several airstrikes in the area of Labmune, which is near Nakura, and that car specifically was targeted. We also have other Israeli shelling in the towns of Tayr Harfa and Wazani. They have been also heavily bombarded, but the heaviest shelling that occurred was yesterday, and at least 50% of Israel's assaults yesterday were conducted through aerial strikes through their war jets. There was a lot of destruction in the town of Ramya. Several houses, civilian houses, were destroyed. Hezbollah, in one of those strikes, says that they lost four Hezbollah members, and they have of course, declared the names of those Hezbollah fighters. Hezbollah has also declared that they had launched in one of the areas, which is in Liman. This is considered a newly recent post that has been put forth by the Israelis in the area of Liman. Hezbollah said it targeted it with a kamikaze drone, and it struck its target very precisely. And when you say a recent post, that means that the Israelis are basically moving away from many of those posts that are on the border, since they have been targeted many times by Hezbollah, and therefore trying to situate themselves in areas that are further from the border. They're creating new makeshift posts, and so that is proof that Hezbollah has been very efficient when it comes to targeting their posts.
The Iran's president is in the Algerian capital to attend a summit of gas exporting countries forum. Ibrahim Raisi was welcomed by the Algerian prime minister upon arrival in Algiers. Raisi then met with his Algerian counterpart, Abdelmadjid Tebboune, before start of the summit. A North African country is hosting the seventh summit of heads of state and government of the GECF. The forum is comprised of 11 member states and 8 observer states. And now vote counting is underway in Iran for Friday's elections that will determine the fate of the next parliament and assembly of experts. The process of vote tallying kicked off soon after polls closed following the extension of voting hours 3 times. Iran's election commissions announced the winners in some of the constituencies. The voter turnout in the elections is set to be at over 41%, which means 25 million people out of more than 61 million eligible voters took part in the balloting. Over 15,000 candidates are vying for 290 seats in parliament. Hundreds of candidates are also in the race for 88-seat Assembly of Experts, which is a deliberative body elected for 8 years. Iranian voters have expressed the unwavering support for Islamic revolution by actively participating in the elections. Iranians say they deeply believe in the power of their collective voice and democratic processes in the Islamic Republic. Let's listen to what some of them had to say.
With our votes, we want to show that despite problems and deficiencies in the country's governance, the people are wholeheartedly supporting the revolution, their national interests, and their country.
We have to fulfill our duty to the extent we can. Yes, there are many problems, too many problems. We're sad and we voice our criticism as much as we can. God willing, those responsible will think about them, and probably many of them do care.
I feel that the participation is much better than last time, and in my opinion, people are optimistic about the elections.
With all the propaganda that hostile media made, I think the turnout would be higher than the previous round.
Iran's Constitutional Council has the important role of overseeing the electoral process and confirming the final results of the elections. Our correspondent Gisu Misha Ahmadi earlier talked to the spokesperson of the very council at a polling station in Tehran.
We've witnessed the voting of our people from the very early hours. And as you can see, in midday, we see such great crowds here. And this shows that people deem it important to use their right. The future of the country is important to them. The future of themselves and their children are important to them. Thank God that there's been no problem since the beginning of voting, and everything has been smooth and facilitated, and people are casting their ballots in the two parliamentary elections and the Assembly of Experts elections. Since the morning, we've been overseeing the elections. We have not seen any special irregularity since the morning. And some minor issues have been removed. We have not had any special problem. As well as the 230,000 public supervisors, we have also introduced a system so that all the 80 million population of Iran can supervise the election. So if there is any potential irregularity, they could document it for us.
And religious minorities in Iran are also casting their ballots alongside their fellow countrymen in the nation's Legislative and Assembly of Experts elections. The Archbishop of Tehran says elections are the sign of stability in any country.
Usually, elections taking place in any place, it is a sign of that country's stability. And now in Iran, when the election of the parliament is going on peacefully, rightly, this is a sign of the Iranian society's well-being. Therefore, it is important to participate in the election. Election, as I said, it's a sign of sound society. And thanks God that in Iran, the election that is taking place, it's a sign of the sound of society in Iran.
U.S. military has carried out fresh airstrikes on Yemen to put pressure on the Arab country to stop its anti-Israel operations in the Red Sea. U.S. Central Command said in a statement that raids are targeting air defense systems of Yemen, and that followed an earlier statement by CENTCOM that a U.S. flagship was targeted with a ballistic missile in the Red Sea. The U.S. and U.K. have conducted a number of airstrikes on Yemen to stop Yemenis from their naval blockade on the Israeli regime. Yemeni armed forces launched their operations against Israel-linked ships over the regime's genocide in Gaza. But over the past month, Yemenis have intensified attacks on U.S. and British ships as well in retaliation for the two countries' aggression against the Arab country. That's it for your latest here, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن
by means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى و دین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیبه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 كتاب الله. بسم الله
الرحمن الرحيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
On the occasion of the 40th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, February 11th, 2019. Supervising and governmental organizations must prevent corruption from being conceived and fight its spread with sincerity and sensitivity. This fight needs faithful men ready for jihad, who are dignified and have pure financial records and bright hearts. This fight is an effective part of an all-around effort that the Islamic Republic must put into established justice. Justice has been among the primary ideals pursued by all prophets, and in the Islamic Republic, it has equal status and value. This is a sacred word for all times and in all lands, and would not be completely established unless under the governance of Imam Mahdi. May our spirits be sacrificed for him. However, it is relatively always and everywhere possible, and it is a duty to be carried out by anyone, especially the rulers and the powerful. The Islamic Republic has taken major steps in this way, examples of which have been briefly mentioned above. Of course, more works need to be done to explain and describe the efforts made in this regard. And the conspiracy by the enemies of the revolution aimed at twisting the reality, or at least remaining silent and concealing the truth, must be nullified.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Regardless, I am clearly telling the beloved young people that the future of the country awaits. That what has been done until now stands at a huge distance from what must have been done. In the Islamic Republic, the officials' hearts must constantly beat for eliminating the deprivations, and they must be seriously fearful of deep class struggles. In the Islamic Republic, not only seeking wealth is not a crime, it is actually encouraged. However, discrimination in the distribution of public resources and granting special privileges and tolerating economic cheaters, all of which result in injustice, are strictly forbidden. Moreover, ignoring classes in need of support is never acceptable.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I want to thank you for bringing me home.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
A damning report indicates that deaths from terrorism in Africa have skyrocketed more than 100,000% during the so-called U.S. War on Terror. The study by the Africa Center for Strategic Studies revealed that during 2002 and 2003, when the U.S. was just beginning its decades-long war, a total of just 9 terrorist attacks were counted throughout all of Africa, leading to only 23 casualties. But after 2 decades of U.S. intervention in Africa with the purported aim of helping the continent in counterterrorism, deaths from Takfiri violence in Africa increased to 23,322 last year, reaching a record level of lethal violence. An article published by the Responsible Statecraft website notes that these findings contradict claims by the U.S. military command in Africa, AFRICOM, that it is thwarting terrorist threats on the continent and promoting security and stability. So, what exactly are U.S. troops doing in Africa if they're not fighting terrorists as they claim? Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and this is Africa Today. This week, we are focusing on an unprecedented upsurge of terrorism in Africa amid the presence of U.S. troops across the continent. Our experts will give us their incisive analysis on how the U.S. has contributed to increased terrorist attacks in Africa.
U.S. increased terrorism in Africa. Imperialist powers, led by the United States, have long viewed the African continent as a place for stealing valuable assets. The continent has a huge chunk of the world's remaining mineral wealth and is home to major global oil and gas reserves. That is why the European powers and United States seek to control these resources by deploying their military forces across the continent under the pretext of combating terrorism.
It is now becoming clear to all that the presence of U.S.-led Western forces in Africa is the source of insecurity across the continent. Bassoum Mabazi, Burkina Faso's Minister of State, addressed the 78th session of the General Assembly of the United Nations last year and said Western troops operating in West Africa are out to plunder the region's resources.
We have some 10,000 soldiers, armed soldiers, that are foreign soldiers. Most of them are French soldiers, but there are also American soldiers, Germans, Italian, etc. They have weapons. They have flying equipment. They have surveillance equipment, which is the most sophisticated in the world. And yet, they don't see the hundreds of terrorists that are moving around in order to serve death and desolation, often with unimaginable weapons at their side. In Mali, in Niger, in Burkina Faso, there is no factory to manufacture weapons nor munitions. So, who is recruiting these terrorists? Who is training them? Who is providing them with weapons? Who feeds them and with what means? Do you believe in this philanthropy on behalf of whom the Westerners have sent their armies to the Sahel to die for our beautiful blue eyes? Well, if you believe that, then what justifies the diplomatic irritation and other gesticulation of France when we told them to skedaddle with their armies? The real reason is really about the resources that are underground in the Sahel, indeed.
Well, for more on how the U.S. has contributed to the increase of terrorism in Africa, we have contacted Abdul Latif Ahmed, a researcher and a digital news editor. Thanks a lot for your time, sir, today.
Thank you for having me.
We also have Professor Abdul Wahab Sheikh Abdul Samad, the Chief Executive Officer of the Afro-Asia Institute for Strategic Studies based in Nairobi, Kenya. Thanks a lot for your time, Professor, today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, deaths from terrorism in Africa, as we have seen, have skyrocketed more than 100,000% during the so-called U.S. war on terror, according to the new study by the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. Now, these findings contradict claims by the U.S. military command in Africa, known as AFRICOM, that it is thwarting terrorist attacks across the continent. Let's start off with Mr. Ahmad. What's your take on this report?
We can see already that counterinsurgency strategies by especially the West has not improved the life of people. Again, most of the times there are talks about sharing intelligence, supplying African countries with arms to fight insurgency. But again, if this there's a spike in insurgency, clearly shows that the strategies that have been employed are not working. And therefore, there is need to rejig the system. There is need to have alternative arrangements for, to mitigate insurgency on the continent. So again, it is clear that in spite of, the claims to funding, the claims to supply of arms, the claims to sharing of intelligence, there is a gross failure of security architecture, or on the continent.
The U.S. has 21 publicly known military facilities in 15 countries in Africa and a military footprint in most African countries. Now, let's bring in Professor Abdul Wahab Sheikh. Now, in your opinion, what exactly are U.S. forces doing in Africa? Because we know that they're in the continent under the pretext of fighting terrorism, but we have seen a rapid increase in terrorist attacks across the continent over the last two decades.
U.S. involvement in Africa leads to more terrorism and showing that the current approach is not effective at all. In America or U.S. has more than 21 bases in Africa. Whenever they have a base, the insecurity, the terrorism, the conflict, all, it became, ungovernable. For instance, if I give you an example, for instance, in Somalia, there is Al-Shabaab terrorist organization in Somalia. Who keeping them? Mostly the Western imperialists, because they don't want to allow them, to rule or govern the entire country. At the same time, they want also the government of the day, to at least govern the entire country, because they don't want it. They want to keep, terrorism in Africa so that at least, they can contain within Somali territories. That's why for the last 33 years, Somalia has no effective government. Somalia has no central government. Mainly, the Western world, the imperialist West, they don't want to see, a stable, a strong, and united Somalia.
Areas affected by terrorism in Africa are strategically located and rich in natural resources. From gold and uranium-rich regions of the Sahel to Somalia, a country in a strategic location, to gas-rich Mozambique, a country that experts say has the potential to become the Qatar of Africa. We also have the DRC, the world's largest producer of cobalt and third largest producer of copper. Both minerals are critical for clean energy technologies.
Recently, there have been anti-U.S. demonstrations in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where protesters accused the U.S. and France of backing rebels and terrorists in the mineral-rich eastern part of the country.
We are claiming our rights. France and the United States are fostering the war in the eastern DRC by supporting the rebellion. A country like Rwanda cannot fight against the Democratic Republic of the Congo. We are marching. We are not breaking or destroying people's property, but the head of the police is sending his officers to chase us away.
There is no doubt that Western powers are out to plunder these resources and therefore cannot be part of the solution. The United States Military Command in Africa, AFRICOM, is now seen by many as an imperialist war machine that creates threats before managing the perception of safety. The ultimate objective of AFRICOM is advancing the United States' economic and geostrategic interest in Africa.
Now, my next question is to Professor Abdul Wahab Sheikh. Do you think Western imperialist powers are behind the upsurge of terrorism in Africa? And can they really assist in restoring security across the continent?
the Western imperialists as a part and parcel of African problems as we speak right now. They want to exploit African resources. They want to undermine the safety and security of African continent so that at least they can exploit and loot the African resources. A very good example in West Africa, whereby several countries in West Africa, that's Mali, Burkina Faso, Guinea, and Niger, are struggling to contain the terrorism in their respective countries, mainly who are supporting them, those terrorist groups in West Africa, are Western imperialists. Why are they doing that? In order to loot and exploit African resources. A very good example in Niger, whereby the French companies are mining so that, a 1 kilogram of uranium in Niger, they are buying from locals less than $1, and they're going to sell, into the world market more than $240. Right now, as we speak right now, 186 companies are mining in DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo. And they're creating 110 militias which are answerable to the Western companies, so that they continue the looting, they will continue exploitation, they will continue undermining the safety and security of African societies or African countries, so that they can easily loot the resources of Africa. But no question about that. I have no doubt in my mind, African, the Western imperialists are part and parcel of the of African problems today.
The UN Secretary General says efforts to counter terrorism must be anchored in human rights and strategies that focus on the marginalized and vulnerable people.
Communities and the state need to be joined with the common purpose of rejecting terrorist ideologies and challenging those who espouse them. And this means governments adopting a comprehensive and inclusive approach involving all parts of society. It means starting at the grassroots, where families and local communities are at the front line of efforts to protect vulnerable people from succumbing to pernicious ideologies. It means increasing our support to civil society organizations who make a unique and invaluable contribution to tackling terrorism and preventing violent extremism. And I am pleased that many of them will join us tomorrow. And it means engaging women and young people so that they can play meaningful roles in the developing, monitoring and implementing counterterrorism policies and programs.
Now, Mr. Ahmed, can you tell us more on how marginalized persons susceptible to being recruited into terrorist groups can be rescued from these evil terrorist organizations?
So basically, apart from poverty and ignorance, there is need to intentionally bridge the gap between the hustle and the hustlers. Most of the terrorists are able to exploit the people, exploit the gaps in the system, the social gaps in the system. So yes, there is need to retool the system. There is need to have functional education, the type of education that makes people have agency to understand that certain decisions are taken on their own without having to rely on the groupthink and the exploitation of their religion or their culture or their current economic situation. That is what the terrorists exploit most of the time. So for me, education is a veritable tool to restructure the mindset, to reset the mindset of people, in the affected regions. When you have the right kind of education, the right type of exposure and intellection, you will not be railroaded into the antics of terrorists and insurgents, as the case may be.
Thanks, Mr. Ahmed, for that. Let's now take a short break before we continue our discussion on how the so-called U.S. war on terror has actually led to a 100,000% increase of terrorism in Africa over the last two decades.
U.S. increased terrorism in Africa.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back. This week we are focusing on an unprecedented upsurge of terrorism in Africa amid the presence of U.S. troops across the continent.
Bassoma Bazi, Minister of State of Burkina Faso, in an address to the UN General Assembly last year, stressed that his country, Mali and Niger, are dealing with a war imposed on them by imperialism under the pretext of terrorism.
Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso are dealing with a war that was imposed upon them by imperialism under the pretext of terrorists. And these are sowing terror and destruction, despite the UN Charter with principles of equality, justice on one hand, and on the other hand, international law, which has been often cited here at the UN. There is a massive chasm between in the treatment of these different issues.
Professor Abdi Wahab, what's your take on this statement by the minister from Burkina Faso, a country currently at the forefront of battling imperialism?
But that statement, I agree with him. You know, the Western imperialists are undermining the security of African nations. They are the ones who, in fact, assisting and supporting terrorism in Burkina Faso. When the military seizes the power, then they can easily contain all those militias who get a support from the Western imperialists, so that they can easily loot the African resources. So the question is, why, when the military came to power, Burkina Faso, Niger, Guinea, and Mali are more safe today than 2 years, 3 years ago? Because 2 or 3 years ago, all those guys were, terror organizations, be it what they call Al-Qaeda or Boko Haram, are getting a support for the Western imperialists so that they can create a tension, conflict, among the African societies. Africans, they must come together and defend themselves against the Western imperialists. The African society, they come together and fight against the terror groups who are getting support from the Western world. That's the only thing the African society, they can survive. Otherwise, the new colonialism is real, and they continue to root Africa. Because today, French, for instance, if French stop looting Africa, automatically French will become a third world country, as we speak right now. They will become a third world country. So in order to French become a strong nation, in order to be a superpower, they have to lead Africa. All Western cities, all Western countries, they build the blood of African society.
Now, apart from poverty, ignorance has been cited as a major reason that terrorist groups find recruiting grounds in Africa. Now, Professor Abdul Wahab Sheikh, do you think the root cause of violent extremism and terrorism in Africa can be addressed through proper education and training?
No question about that. Both education and training can improve the livelihood of the African society, can improve the security and safety of the African continent. Mainly other factors, apart from the terrorism and violent terrorism, other factors which contribute the instability of Africa, including, among others, that's a political corruption, economic inequality, social fractures, and local grievances also contribute to the terrorism in Africa. So all those factors together, they in fact contribute the safety and security of the African society, apart from all those facts above are part and parcel of the insecurity in Africa. And the sooner they address the issue of the political corruption, the issue of the economic inequality, the issue of the social fractures, and also addressing the local grievances can easily improve the security of the African continent.
For decades, Africa has been teaming with foreign military personnel, with more than a dozen countries known to have deployments and bases on the continent. The U.S. and its allies, such as France, the U.K., Germany, Italy, and Belgium, have military presence on the continent. Despite this presence, insecurity is rampant across the continent.
A protester in Mali, speaking before French troops were ejected from the country, said that ever since they trusted France, a U.S. ally, to assist in combating terrorism, the situation in the country worsened.
I'd be so happy like at a party if France quit Mali today. Really, ever since we trusted them with our security, everything has become worse.
Clearly, these U.S.-led imperialist forces are the source of instability in Africa. Mr. Ahmad, what's your opinion on this?
Okay, so this is what I think of it. I always say that African problems require African solutions. Why are the foreign forces on the African soil present? Africans will make, you know, gestures to them seeking for help and assistance. But you see, internally, what Africans should do is to close ranks, you know, is to look for alternative approach to defeating these monsters, because you cannot have investment, you cannot have hospitality, you cannot have your businesses and enterprise running smoothly if you have, you know, a miasma of insecurity, you know, cutting across the region. So beyond blaming and finger pointing at the U.S., we must internalize our solution. We must be able to say that within ourselves, we have identified the problem, and then we have homegrown solutions to fix the problem. Yes, it is easy to say the American forces should go. The American assistance, we do not need it. Western, you know, interference should go. However, we must find homegrown solutions, you know, within ourselves, close ranks, and ensure that we defeat, you know, the rising insecurity on the continent.
There is no doubt that U.S. forces are up to no good in Africa and are, in fact, there to take care of Washington's illegitimate economic and geopolitical interests. Now, many people in Africa are demanding that U.S. troops and other imperialist forces withdraw, as we have seen, and let African countries take care of their own security with the assistance of non-imperialist powers. Professor Abdulhab, you have the last word. What's your take on this?
The U.S. presence in Africa is not, a good sign. It's not welcome at all in the continent. The sooner they depart from the continent, the better. For the last quarter century, the U.S. intervention in Africa is not good. A very good example in Libya, when they intervened in Libya, 2011, Libya was a stable state. Libya has some functioning institutions. Libya has a better life than today. But as we speak right now, where is Libya? Libya is gone. Again, the intervention of the Sahel states, specifically the French intervention, and together with American intervention in Mali, in Burkina Faso, in Niger, together with and Guinea, it's not good. That's why the African society, they start, you know, organizing themselves. They start, you know, against the Western interventions in Africa. They're realizing the military presence in USA in Africa is not adding up. It's not, assisting the security and safety of the African nations. But it's a part and parcel of African problems. So the sooner they left Africa, the better. The sooner they depart Africa, the better. The sooner, in fact, stop that kind of approach, which is undermining the safety and security of the continent, is better. They must come up a new approach so that they can easily, gain the hearts and minds of African society. Otherwise, the multipolar system is now real. And I don't think so now, right now, U.S. intervention in Africa is highly welcome.
Well, there you have it. There is no doubt that U.S. military presence in Africa is a major factor in the upsurge of terrorism across the continent. And the sooner the U.S. forces leave Africa, the better. I'd like to thank our guest today, Professor Abdulwahab Sheikh Abdulsamad, the Chief Executive Officer of Afro-Asia Institute for Strategic Studies based in Nairobi, and Abdulatif Ahmad, a digital news editor. Well, and that brings us to the end of this week's edition of Africa Today. It's always great having you. From me, Mubarak Kenya, it's goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world on The Lantern.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Salamun Alaikum. This is Lantern. On the continuation of Lantern, we have an interesting story. Of course, after listening to this story, we have the speech of the scholar and the important points of this story. Are you ready for your turn? He was a student, probably in his early 20s. I didn't know his name. I really didn't care. All I know is he was going for a layup while playing basketball, lost his balance and fell on the ground flat on his back. We thought he would shake it off and continue the game, so no one really cared. To everyone's surprise, he never got up. At first, a few people on his team, later everyone went up to him, but he just wouldn't reply. CPR did not good. The ambulance personnel couldn't save him from dying. The result at the ER was no better. He was dead. As I came home tonight, I thought to myself, it could have been me going up for that layup. It was very possible that I could be laying in the cold city morgue right this minute as I type this email. Am I ready to die? Did I communicate with Allah today? Did I perform my daily prayers? Did I seek the pleasure of Allah? Did I treat my parents and family with respect and love? Did I give any at all in charity or sadaqah today? How many times did I remember Allah and recount His name? The entire day I made time to go to school, check my email, read the news, chat with friends, watch TV, play basketball. But did I even once say, Astaghfirullah? Did I ask Allah to forgive the sins that I've committed today? No, not once. Did I say Alhamdulillah other than in my daily prayers? No, not once, my friends. Would you like to know why? Because I was too caught up with myself and my daily activities. Well, guess what? I could have lost my life during a layup in a basketball game, and what do I have with me? Not a thing. Nothing that I did today do I get to bring with me to the grave. Nothing. A few words that I could have uttered were the only things that I could have brought with me. A few words that wouldn't take a few seconds of concentration out of the 24 hours. There was allotted to me a few cents in charity instead of cold drinks and candy bars could have saved my soul, but I insisted to continue with my careless attitude. Thank Allah, it wasn't my turn to go, because I sure wasn't ready. Now I close my eyes and say Alhamdulillah. Now I look back and say Astaghfirullah. Now I have a different attitude. Now I want to prepare for my turn. Did you perform your prayers today? Did you give in charity and love? Did you ask for forgiveness yet? Do you care? I'm asking because I don't want to see you fall, knowing you aren't ready for your turn. Are you ready for your turn? May the peace and mercy of Allah be upon us all.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله dear audience welcome to a new episode of Lantern from Arab English Radio well what we do in this program is to listen to certain religious stories and then try to talk about them explore them and explain about some of the points in those stories in order to take lessons and make use of them in our daily lives well today we want to talk about remembering death When a person is involved in his daily affairs and he or she neglects death and the eternal life, he or she gets ready for engaging in all sorts of sins and wrongdoings and surrenders the temptations of Satan from their whims and desires of their own self. The most significant factor which could tame this aggressive self is the remembrance of death and the instability of this world and the events of the next world. In fact, if we pay attention, we will see that sooner or later death will overcome a person and he will be put in the grave and his limbs will disintegrate and turn into earth. He will cut his relations with his wealth, children, house, and the world as such. He or she will pretty soon be forgotten as if they had never existed. But he or she is responsible now for what they have done before. Now they wish they had never been born to take this burden of sins on their shoulders. For this very reason, it is emphasized in the Islamic traditions to remember death. The Prophet of Islam sallallahu alaihi wasallam has said, "The best asceticism in this world is remembrance of death. The best worship is remembrance of death. The best contemplation is the remembrance of death. One on whom the remembrance of death weighs heavily will find his grave to be one of the gardens of paradise." Imam Ali alayhi salam also said, "Remember the destroyer of pleasures, the terminator of desires, the inviter of separations. Remember the disperser of groups, the remover of hopes, the one that draws near what is to be forgotten, the announcer of partings and dispersions." Imam Sadiq alayhi salam also said, "The remembrance of death kills desires in the soul, cuts off the sources of heedlessness and strengthens the heart through Allah's promises. It softens the temperament, breaks the signpost of whims, puts out the fire of greed and makes the world appear miserable and worthless." All the narrations we refer to are about taking remembrance of death serious, not only because of ourselves, but also for the sake of other things as well. Okay, now let's go for a short break and we will be back soon.